This week's parasha by Midbar. So, by Midbar, the first pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Moshe. They tell us where in the Midbar of Sinai, in the Mishkan, on the first day of Iyar, in the second year after they came out of Mitzrayim. To put this in context, we know that on Rosh Chodesh Nisan of that year, they set up the Beis HaMikdash. And so this is about the Mishkan, rather. But this is a month later. It says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, as we see in the Torah, spoke to Moshe many times. Vayedaber Hashem lo Moshe lemor. Why this special indication of place, exact place, and spot and time? So he brings a parable that Mr. Cohn, or Jones, was a famous multi-billionaire, several skyscrapers, right? He was like Warren Buffett in terms of his holdings, and he owned, you know, half the world. But, as with many of these demagogues, right, he just got rid of his second wife, who was one of the Hughes people, you know, the rich oil people, an oil magnate, right? And they had a terrible divorce. They fought like dogs. And his first wife, he had a divorce because she cheated on him. And he didn't speak of these marriages. And he wouldn't tell anybody why his marriages went sour. And he wouldn't even acknowledge them. Many years later, he had a close friend who said, I finally found the ideal woman for you. The girl isn't wealthy, but she has tremendous midos. She comes from family, a really refined family. Her father and mother are both teachers, highly respected, quiet. And the magnate, who was lonely, said, okay, I'll check it out. And did investigations. And he really was impressed. He went out with the potential match for a while. And he asked her to marry him. And because it was, for him in his mind, a perfect wedding, he said, I want to show this to the world. While I've never been happy or proud of whom I was married to, I finally am. It says, the Ribbono Shel Olam created the human beings. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had disappointment after disappointment. He destroyed the generation of the flood, and the generation of the tower had to be dispersed. And the Torah moves quickly through those. We know that the parshas of Bereishis and Noah take up the first 10 generations of mankind. Right? Then we get to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. If we get some more detail, but in there we had people like Sodom, we had the Egyptians. They weren't all pristine, great players. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, record the specifics now, because I have a generation that is truly different. They are the spiritual inheritors of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And they have the innate ability to be faithful to Torah and mitzvot. Therefore, please mark this day the day I acknowledge their status in my eyes. We're told that this sefer is called Bamidbar. It occurred in the wilderness. And we know that the greatest event in the wilderness was actually the giving of the Torah. And the question is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked the desert for a specific reason. And we're told, if the Torah had been given in Eretz Yisroel, those who lived in Eretz Yisroel would claim ownership to the Torah. The potential, I guess, Gerim would have been dissuaded because they would say it's for those who were in the land. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it out in the desert to indicate that anyone who wants to be part of the Torah lifestyle can join. The other thing is, the Midbar has a Din Hefker. It's ownerless. Everyone can go there. And that's what it's saying. The same way the wilderness is free and can be stepped on, it leads to an example of humility, which is something Klal Yisroel has to copy. And he says, let's talk again about anivus, humility. We're told Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble of all people. Did Moshe Rabbeinu think he was no bigger than an ant? That he was no better than an amoeba? No. Moshe Rabbeinu realized that he had within him, and he had been bestowed by the Rabbonu Shel Olam, with tremendous talents and abilities. But he also realized that they came from Hashem, and having abilities is not a reason to toot your own horn. Moshe's pride was only in what he accomplished for the Rabbonu Shel Olam. And the more he realized the greatness of Hashem, the more he realized the degree of difference between the greatest Navi in Klal Yisro, he, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Rabbonu Shel Olam. And they say the reason why Talmud Chacham has a level of anivus, humility, is because a Talmud Chacham has to have the ability to learn from others. Torah does not exist in a vacuum. The notion of taking a Torah scholar and locking him into, quote, a library or something like that. No, he's got to interact with people and other gedolim. The other thing is, the interaction with other people suppress the feeling of superiority. You will sit with someone, studying with them, maybe teaching them, and they will come up with a great idea. And the Gadol B'Torah realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives these insights to others so that nobody feels superior. We're also told that people who have a rational, reasonable element of humility are able to correct their ways. They're able to sustain a criticism as something that happened, discern if it's appropriate, and where it is, act accordingly. Humility leads one to have less need for materiality. A conceited person needs to show the world they keep up with the Cones, the Jones, etc. We're told that if misfortune befalls someone who's a Balgaiva, somebody who's haughty, somebody who's overbearing, they have tremendous resentment. A person such as I should suffer such a fate, such indignation? On the other hand, someone who's humble can understand that, as the rabbi said yesterday, money is called a zuz because it rolls around. And one day you can be up, one day you can be down. And it's not a personal degradation inflicted on you by the Almighty. We all realize that someone who is humble, gentle, is more easy to be friendly with. And when we become friendly with that person, their good attributes and actions can have an influence on many others. The other concept of a midbar, of a wilderness, is the notion that we have to toil, a malus betoira. Torah, you know, it's not a matter of picking up a chumash and reading for 10 minutes. And we've got to be able to sacrifice for Torah. Now, we're not required to sacrifice that we have to, you know, live on bread and water alone and things like that. But there are things we have to do or don't do because we adhere to Torah. And we have to devote time, thought, energy, and concern for Torah and Torah institutions and the enhancement of Torah in all of Klal Yisrael. They say that the desert, when you look at it, looks empty, right? We see vast amounts of sand and nothing else. It says that our intellect must in some ways be that way. In other words, not to the extent we can, not have prior prejudices. We should be able to look at the Torah we learn with objective eyes. It says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking, and whatever this means, for an appropriate spot to give Torah, it says, he went to the Red Sea, and we're told, Hayom Ra'av Ayonais. The sea saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ran. The sea was afraid, had shame, and facing the Shekhinah, because on its edge, on the Nile, was the idol Baal-Zephon, the prime deity of the Egyptians, the one that Pharaoh thought would defeat the escaped Jewish nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then looked, it says, to the mountains, but it says that the mountains, for the greatest amount, had become spots of avodah zarah. There were large numbers of idolatrous statues. There were special trees grown for avodah zarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then chose the Midbar. Midbar Sinai, where the Torah was given, and we know that the choice of Har Sinai was again a matter of a nevus. We know that other mountains, so to speak, said to Hashem, I'm bigger, I'm taller. Look at all the trees I provide. Look at all the agriculture I provide. Har Sinai, little mountain, sat in the back, didn't say anything. And Hashem said, no, the mountain that doesn't push itself forward, the mountain that has this level of anivus, humility, that's the spot where Torah should be given. Moshe counts the Jewish males between the age of 20 and 60. We're told that only the, I will call them from birth, the Jews who were spawned by Jewish mothers were counted. The Erevuav was excluded. And Egyptian converts, right, were also excluded. I don't know if that means they were part of the Erevuav or not. And we know that the way Klal Yisrael was counted is the way that we commemorated on Purim with the half a shekel. Each person between the age of 20 and 60 gave half a shekel, which was used for the administration of the Mishkan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, actually made the people being counted account for their heritage and actually had to have eidus that they were kosher. And Hashem said to Moshe, I want you to record each person's, each man's name, Yaakov ben Shimon, his father's name, and I want you to calculate the number of males between 20 and 60 in each shaved. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I understand that this is a tremendous challenge, right? So I'm going to give you Aaron to join you. We're told that the last time there was a count after the Egel, Aaron was excluded because his involvement sort of left him out. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Aaron has proven himself. He's a Kohen Gadol. Not to me proven himself, but to the people. He can be involved in the administration. Similarly, the 12 Nesiim, the princes of the tribes, were counted. Ephraim and Manasseh in this census were counted separately. The B'nai Levi got a separate census that we're going to hear about later in either this parsha or next parsha, Naso. Moshe assembled the Nesiim, and they, it says, assembled all of the men at the entrance of the Mishkan, ASAP. On that day, the census began. Right? It says it took many days to complete this census, and it says 603,550 men existed between the ages of 20 and 60. This was the fourth recounting of Bnei Yisroel. When Yaakov and his family went, we have the 70. The Torah tells us 600,000 men left Egypt. After the Cheder Egel, there was another count on the day after Yom Kippur, on the 11th of Tishrei. This was done to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for Klal Yisrael and to indicate how they had cleansed their Averas. 7 months later, now, another census occurs. And there's a nace in that this census 3 and 4 have the same numbers. And they say, in 7 months, 13 teenagers, 19-year-olds became 20, right? And certain people over 60 became 61. And yet there was no variation in size. One answer is that the cutoff dates in both of the calculations were exactly the same. So if you're counting the same numbers, right? But that would indicate that nobody passed away during that period. The mitzvah, it says, of being involved in two counts and probably other mitzvahs had yielded a period of 7 months when no yid between the age of 20 and 60 was nifter. And there are other explanations how the numbers stayed the same, but I don't have the time right now to go through it. Just looking, it's 25 after, and the rabbi's here. Okay. I'm going to stop here because it's a natural break in the material.